in the yard. He sipped his beer, which he held in the same hand as the cigarette, dexterous for a person missing two fingers. He crinkled his eyes against the smoke as he exhaled out the screen.
He just wants to ball her. Pretty soon he's going to tell her to get rid of me. That's when I get my 38, teach him a fucking thing or two. Then you'll see a little blood of the lamb.
I picked the marshmallows out of my cereal, arranged them on the rim of the bowl, purple moons, green clovers. It's not a sin if you're married, I said. I didn't think he'd hear me, but he did.
I'm already married, he said, looking out the screen toward the pepper tree, its boughs blowing like a woman's long hair.
I alternated the moons and clovers, eating the ones that fell in the bowl. Where's your wife?
I don't know. Haven't seen her in 2-3 years.
He seemed so calm about it that someone was walking around with his name and his history, and he didn't even know where she was. It made me feel dizzy, like I wanted to grab hold of something heavy and hang on. This was the life I was going to be living. Everybody, separated from everybody else, hanging on for a moment, only to be washed away. I could grow up and drift away, too. It hit me like a punch in the stomach. I could go for years and never see her again. Just like this, people losing each other, their hands slipping loose in a crowd. I might never see her again. Those dull eyes behind the dry aquarium, the shape of her back. My God, how could I have avoided knowing this all these months? I wanted my mother. I wanted something to hold on to me, not let me slip away.
Hey, what's all this?
Uncle Ray came over and sat next to me at the table. He stuck his cigarette in his beer can and took my hands in his.
Don't cry, kid. What's wrong? You can tell Uncle Ray.
All I could do was shake my head. Raw sobs, like razors.
You miss your mom?
I nodded. My throat felt like there were two hands wrapped around it, squeezing, forcing water out of my eyes. Snot ran from my nose. Ray scooted his chair so he could put his arm around me, handed me a napkin off the table. I buried my face in his chest and let my tears and snot wet the front of his t-shirt. It felt good to be held. I breathed in his smell, cigarettes and stale body and beer and fresh-cut wood, something green. He held me. He was solid. He wouldn't let me drift away. Talking to me, telling me nobody was going to hurt me. I was a great kid. Nothing was going to happen. After a while, he wiped my cheeks with the back of his hand, lifting my chin so he could look at me, pushing my hair out of my eyes.
You really miss her, huh? Tell me, is she as pretty as you?
I smiled a little. His eyes were so sad and kind. I have a picture. I ran down to my room, brought back a copy of my mother's last book, Dust. I gently stroked my hand over her picture on the back cover. On the beach at Big Sur, huge rocks in the water, driftwood, she wore a fisherman's sweater, her hair swept back by the wind. She looked like a Lorelei, cause of shipwreck. Odysseus would have had to lash himself to the mast.
You're going to be prettier, he said.
I wiped my nose on the short sleeve of my t-shirt, smiled. My mother was a woman people stopped in the market to wonder at. Not like Star, but just at the sheer beauty. They seemed startled she had to shop and eat like anyone else. I couldn't imagine owning beauty like my mother's. I wouldn't dare. It would be too scary. No way. Hey, Way, you're just a different type. You're the sweetheart type. Your mother looks like she could take a bite out of you. Not that I'd mind, I can take it rough too, but you know what I mean. For you, they'll just fall down like flies. He peered into my lowered face with his kind eyes, speaking so gently. You hear me? You're going to have to push the bodies out of the way if you want to go down the street. Nobody had ever said anything like that to me before. Even if he was just lying to make me feel better, who bothered to do that now? He flipped through some of the pages, reading, Look, this one's about you. I snatched it away, my face flaming. I knew the poem. Shh, Astrid sleeping, pink well of her wordless mouth. One long leg trails off the bed, like an unfinished sentence. Fine freckles hold a constellation of second chances. Her cowrie shell, where the unopened woman whispers. She used to recite it at poetry readings. I would sit drawing at my table as if I didn't hear her, as if it weren't me she was talking about, my body, my childish girl parts. I hated that poem. What did she think? I didn't know what she was talking about. I didn't care who she read it to. No, she thought because I was her daughter, that I belonged to her, that she could do anything she wanted with me, make me into poetry, expose my chicken bones and my cowrie shell, my unopened woman. What happened to her? He asked. She killed her boyfriend, I said, looking down at her photo, her profile a spear under my ribs, piercing my liver, my right lung. A tear ran off my eyelash and fell on her picture. I wiped it off. She's in prison. He shrugged as if that was something people did. Not good, but not shocking. I finished out the 8th grade at Mount Gleason Junior High, my third school this year. I didn't know anyone, didn't want to. I ate lunch with Davy. We quizzed each other using flashcards he'd made for himself. What's a baby ferret called? A kitten. How many kittens in a litter? 6 to 9. Constellation Andromeda, major feature? The Great Andromeda Nebula. My caseworker visited our trailer often, sat with Star, trying to look handsome on the porch under the spider plants. One day he said, my mother was settled at the women's prison in Chino now and could have visitors starting Thursday. There was a group that brought children to see their parents in prison, and I was going to have a visit. After the last visit, I was afraid. I didn't know if I could do that again. What if she was still like that? A zombie? I couldn't stand that. At one point in the night, I even thought of not going. But at 5, I got up, showered, dressed. Remember, no jeans, nothing blue, Star reminded me the night before. You want to walk back out of there, don't you? I didn't need reminding. I wore my new pink dress, my bra, and my Daisy Duck shoes. I wanted to show her I was growing up. I could take care of myself. At Chino, we turned off the freeway and drove south. Finally, we came to real country and drove along roads with no signals, just dairies and fields, the smell of manure. Now I could see the prison, a steam stack, a water tower, the guard tower. It was aluminum-sided, like Star's trailer. Frontera wasn't at all as I had imagined. I'd been picturing Birdman of Alcatraz or I Want to Live, with my mother as Susan Hayward. Its low brick buildings were widely spaced and landscaped with trees and roses and acres of green lawn. It was more like a suburban high school than a prison, except for the guard towers, the razor wire. Crows squawked raucously in the trees. It sounded like they were tearing something apart, something they didn't even want, just for the fun of destroying it. We filed through the guard tower, signed in. They searched our backpacks and passed us through the metal detector. They took a package away from one girl. No gifts. You had to mail them. A package from family was allowed 4 times a year. The slam of the gate behind us made us jump. we were locked in. They told me to wait at an orange picnic table under a tree. I was nervous and sick from the ride. I didn't even know if I'd recognize her. I shivered, wishing I'd brought a sweater. And what would she think of me in my bra and high heels? The mothers started coming in from the prison through a different gate. They wore jeans and t-shirts, gray sweaters, sweatsuits. I saw my mother waiting for the woman guard to bring her through. She wore a plain denim dress, button front, but on her the blue was a color, like a song. Her white blonde hair had been hacked off at the neck by someone who had no feeling for the work. But her blue eyes were as clear as a high note on a violin. She had never looked more beautiful. I stood up and then I couldn't move. I waited, trembling as she came over and hugged me to her. Just to feel her touch, to hold her after all those months. I put my head on her chest and she kissed me, smelled my hair. She didn't smell of violets anymore, only the smell of detergent on denim. She lifted my face in her hands and kissed me all over, wiped my tears with her strong thumbs. She pulled me to sit down next to her. I was thirsty for the way she felt, the way she looked, the sound of her voice, the way her front teeth were square, but her second teeth turned slightly, her one dimple, left side, her half smile. Her wonderfully blue eyes flecked with white like new galaxies. The firm, intact planes of her face. She didn't even look like she should be in prison. She looked like she could have just walked off the Venice boardwalk with a book under her arm, ready to settle in at an oceanside cafe. She pulled me down to sit next to her at the picnic table, whispered to me, "Don't cry. We're not like that. We're the Vikings, remember?" "You're so beautiful," I said, touching her hair, her collar, her cheek. Not pliable at all. "Prison agrees with me," she said. "There's no hypocrisy here. Kill or be killed, and everybody knows it." "I missed you so much," I whispered. She put her arm around me, her head right next to mine. She pressed my forehead with her hand, her lips against my temple. "I won't be here forever. It'll take more than this to keep me behind bars. I promise you, I will get out one way or another. One day you'll look out your window, and I'll be there." I looked into her determined face, cheekbones like razors, her eyes making me believe. "I was afraid you'd be mad at me." She stretched me out at arm's length to look at me, her hands gripping my shoulders. "Why would you think that?" "Because I couldn't lie well enough." But I couldn't say it. She hugged me again. Those arms around me made me want to stay there forever. I'd rob a bank and get convicted so we could always be together. I wanted to curl up in her lap. I wanted to disappear into her body. I wanted to be one of her eyelashes or a blood vessel in her thigh, a mole on her neck. "Is it terrible here? Do they hurt you?" "Not as much as I hurt them," she said. And I knew she was smiling, though all I could see was the denim of her sleeve and her arm, still lightly tanned. I had to pull away a little to see her. Yes, she was smiling, her half smile, the little comma-shaped curve at the corner of her mouth. I touched her mouth. She kissed my fingers. I told her about Star and Uncle Ray, the other kids, dirt bikes and ironwood, the colors of the boulders in the wash, the mountain and the hawks. I told her about the sin virus. I loved the sound of her laughter. "You must send me drawings," she said. "You always drew better than you wrote. I can't think of any other reason you haven't written."
"I could write."
"You never did." "You haven't been getting my letters," she said. "Give me your address. I'll write you directly. And you, write to me. Don't go through your social worker. My mistake."
"Oh, we'll learn."
And the vigor returned to her eyes. "We're smarter than they are, ma petite." I didn't know my address, but she told me hers, had me repeat it over and over so I would remember. My mind rebelled against my mother's address. Ingrid Magnuson, inmate W99235. California Institution for Women. Corona Frontera. "Wherever you go, write to me. Write at least once a week or send drawings. God knows the visual stimulation in this place leaves something to be desired. I especially want to see the ex-topless dancer and Uncle Ernie, the clumsy carpenter." It hurt my feelings. Uncle Ray had been there when I needed him. She didn't even know him. "It's Ray. And he's nice."
"Oh," she said. "You stay away from Uncle Ray, especially if he's oh so nice."
But she was in here, and I was out there. I had a friend. She wasn't going to take him away from me. "I think of you all the time," she said, "especially at night. I imagine where you are. When the prison's still and everyone's asleep, I imagine I can see you. I try to contact you. Have you ever heard me calling? Felt my presence in your room?" She stroked a strand of my hair between her fingers, stretched it to see how long it was against my arm. It came to my elbow. I had felt her. I'd heard her call. "Astrid, are you awake?" "Late at night, you never could sleep." She kissed the top of my head right in the part.
"Neither could you."
"Now tell me more about yourself. I want to know everything about you." It was a strange idea. She never wanted to know about me before. But the long days of sameness had led her back to me, to remembering she had a daughter tied up somewhere. The sun was starting to come out and the ground fog glowed like a paper lantern. Uncle Ray was teaching me to play chess from a book, Bobby Fischer Teaches Chess. He had taught himself in Vietnam.
"I had a lot of time to kill there," he said, running his fingers over the peaked hat of the white pawn.
He'd carved the set there, Vietnamese kings and Buddhas for bishops, horses with sculpted cheeks and combed manes. I couldn't imagine the months it must have taken him, patiently carving with a Swiss Army knife while all the bombs blasted around him. I liked the order of chess, the coolness of reason, the joy of its patient steps. We played most nights when Star was at AA or CA meetings or at a Bible study, while the boys watched TV. Uncle Ray kept a little pipe of dope next to him on the arm of the chair to smoke while he waited for me to make my move. That night, the boys were watching a nature show. The littlest one, Owen, sucked his thumb, holding his stuffed giraffe, while Peter twined a bit of his hair around his finger over and over again. Davy narrated the show for them, pointing to the screen. "That's Smokey. He's the alpha male." Uncle Ray waited for my move, looking at me in a way that made my heart open like a moonflower, his eyes on my face, my throat, my hair over my shoulders, changing color in the TV lights. I felt like an undeveloped photograph that he was printing, my image rising to the surface under his gaze. Through the screen door, the summer crickets sang. I flicked my hair behind my shoulders, moved my bishop to Queen's Knight 3, threatening his knight. I sensed how he looked at my bare arm, the shoulder, my lips. To know I was beautiful in his eyes made me beautiful. I had never been beautiful before. We heard the crunch of Star's Torino turning into the yard, car tires in the gravel. earlier than she normally came home. I was disappointed. Ray paid attention to me when she was gone, but when she came home, I went back to being just one of the kids. What was she doing home so early anyway? She usually stayed out until 11, drinking coffee with the addicts or discussing Matthew 20 verse 13 with the old ladies at the church. Shit! Uncle Ray quickly pocketed his stash and small pipe just as the screen door swung open, and the bug zapper zapped a big one at the same time. Star stopped for a second at the door, seeing us and the boys sitting on the couch mesmerized by the TV. Then it was like she was confused to find herself home so soon. She dropped her keys and picked them up. Uncle Ray watched her, her breasts practically coming out of the scooped neck of her dress. Then her smile came on and she kicked off her shoes and sat on the arm of his chair, kissed him. I could see her sticking her tongue in his ear. "Was it canceled?" he asked. It was my move, but he wasn't paying attention. She draped herself over his shoulder, her breasts squashed into his neck. "Sometimes I just get so tired of hearing them complain, taking everybody else's darn inventory." She picked up my remaining white knight. "I love this," she said. "Why don't you ever teach me, Ray, baby?" "I did once," he said in a murmuring, tender voice, turning his head and kissing her breast right in front of me. "Don't you remember? You got so mad you turned the board over." He plucked the knight from her hand and put it back down on the board. King 5. "That was in my drinking days." "Can white mate in one move?" he repeated out of the Bobby Fischer book. "One move," she said, tickling his nose with a strand of her hair. "That doesn't sound too exciting." White knight to King's Bishop 6. I rode the delicately carved knight into place. "Mate." But they were kissing, and then she told the boys to go to bed when they were done and led Uncle Ray back to her bedroom. And I wondered if real daughters were jealous of their mothers and fathers. I imagined having a man like Uncle Ray look at me the way he looked at her. In November, when the air held blue in the afternoons and the sunlight washed the boulders in gold, I turned 14. Star threw me a party with hats and streamers and invited Carolee's boyfriend and even my caseworker, the Jack of Spades. There was a cake from Ralph's Market with a hula girl in a grass skirt, my name written in blue, and they all sang, "Happy Birthday." The cake had a trick candle that wouldn't go out, so I didn't get my wish, which was just that it would always be like this, that my life could be a party just for me. Carolee bought me a mirror from a purse, and Owen and Peter gave me a lizard in a jar with a bow. From Davy, I got a big sheet of cardboard on which he taped animal scat and Xeroxes of animal tracks to match with carefully printed labels. Star's gift was a green stretchy sweater, and the social worker brought me a set of rhinestone barrettes. The last gift was from Ray. I carefully opened the paper and saw the wood carved and inlaid in the pattern of an Art Nouveau moonflower, the cover motif of my mother's first book. I held my breath and took it out of the paper, a wooden jewelry box. It smelled of new wood. I ran my fingers over the moonflower, thought of Ray cutting the pieces, the sinuous edges fitting them so perfectly you couldn't feel the transitions in the woods. He must have done it late at night when I was asleep. I was afraid to show how much I loved it, so I just said, "Thanks," but I hoped he could tell. When the rains came, the yard turned to deep mud and the river rose, filling its enormous channel. What had been a big dry wash littered with rocks and chaparral was transformed into a huge dirty torrent the color of a coffee milkshake. Parts of the burnt mountain sighed and gave way. I never thought it could rain so much. We kept putting pots and cartons and jugs under the leaks in Star's roof, emptying them in the yard. It was the break in a 7-year drought, and the rain that had been held back was being delivered all at once. It lasted without a break through Christmas, leaving us crammed inside the trailer, the boys playing road race and Nintendo, and watching a National Geographic double video of tornadoes over and over again. I spent my days out on the porch swing, staring out at the rain, listening to its voices on the metal roof, and the runoff thundering down the Tuhunga, boulders tumbling, trees washed away whole, knocking into one another like bowling pins. Every color turned to a pale, brownish gray. One day, Ray came out and smoked his pipe a while, leaning one shoulder on the porch upright, not looking at me. He seemed moody, his face troubled.
"You ever think about your dad?" he asked.
"I never met him," I said, stirring with my dangling foot slightly to keep the glider moving. "I was two when he left, or she left him, whatever."
"She tell you about him?"
My father, that silhouette, a form comprised of all I did not know, a shape filled with rain. Whenever I asked, she'd say, "You had no father. I'm your father. You sprang full-blown from my forehead like Athena." He laughed, but sadly.
"Some character."
I found my birth certificate once. Father, Anders Klaus, no middle name. Birthplace, Copenhagen, Denmark, residing in Venice Beach, California. He'd be 54 now. Thunder rolled, but the clouds were too thick to see lightning. The glider squeaked as I rocked myself, thinking of my father, Klaus, Anders, no middle name. I'd found a Polaroid picture of him stuck in a book of my mother's, Windward Avenue. They were sitting together in a beachside cafe with a bunch of other people who looked like they'd all just come in off the beach, tanned, long-haired people wearing beads, table covered with beer bottles. The picture and the birth certificate were all I had of him, that and the question mark in my genetic code, all that I didn't know about myself. Mostly, I think about what he would think of me. We looked out at the sepia pepper tree, the mud in the yard thick as memory. Ray turned so he could lean his back flat against the post, lifted his hands over his head. His shirt crawled up. I could see his hairy stomach.
"He probably thinks you're still two." "That's how I think of Seth. When the boys are down by the river, I imagine he's down there with them. I have to remind myself he's too big for frogs now."
Klaus thought of me as two. My hair like white feathers, my diaper full of sand. He never imagined that I was grown. "Have you ever thought to call him? Find him?" I asked.
Ray shook his head. "I'm sure he hates my guts. I know his mother fed him all kinds of crap about me."
"I bet he misses you, though," I said. "I miss Klaus, and I never even met him. He was an artist, too, a painter. I imagine he'd be proud of me."
"He would be," Ray said.
"Maybe someday you'll meet him." "I think about that sometimes. That when I'm an artist, he'll read about me in the paper and see how I turned out. When I see a middle-aged blonde man, sometimes I want to call out, 'Klaus,' and see if he turns his head." I made the glider creak as I pushed myself slowly. My mother once told me she chose him because he looked like her. So it was as if she were having her own child. But there was a different story in the red Tibetan notebook with the orange binding dated Venice Beach, 1972.
July 12th. Ran into Kay at Small World this afternoon. Saw him before he saw me. Thrill at the sight of him, the slight slouch of broad shoulders, paint in his hair. That threadbare shirt, so ancient, it is more an idea than a shirt. I wanted him to discover me the same way, so I turned away, browsed an Illuminati chapbook. Knowing how I looked against the light through the window, my hair on fire, my dress barely there, waiting to stop his heart. I looked at Ray, gazing out into the rain, and I knew how she felt. I loved his smoke, his smell, his sad hazel eyes. I couldn't have him as a father, but at least we could talk like this out on the porch. He relit his pipe, toked, coughed.
"You might be disappointed," he said. "He might be a jerk. Most guys are jerks."
I rocked myself, knowing it wasn't true. You're not.
Ask my ex.
What you doing out there?
Star opened the screen door, slammed it behind her. She was wearing a sweater she knitted herself, fuzzy and yellow as a chick.
Is this a party anybody can come to? I'm going to blast that fucking TV set, Ray said evenly.
She pulled at the brown tassels of spider plants over her head, plucking the dried leaves and throwing them off the porch, her breasts pushing out of the V-neck.
Look at you, smoking in front of the kids. You always were a bad influence.
But she smiled when she said it, soft and flirting.
Do me a favor, Ray, baby. I'm out of cigs. Could you run down to the store and get me a carton?
She flashed him her flat, wide smile.
I need some beer anyway, he said. You want to come, Astrid?
As if her smile couldn't stretch anymore, it sprang back to the center. Then she stretched it again.
You can go yourself, can't you, big boy? Astrid needs to help me for a minute.
Pluck, pluck, tearing the baby spiders off with the dead leaves. Ray got his jacket and ducked out under the waterfall of water coming off the corrugated steel porch roof, the jacket pulled up to cover his head.
You and me need to talk, Missy,
Star said to me as Ray closed the cab door to the truck and started the motor. Reluctantly, I followed her back into the house, into her bedroom. Star never talked to the kids. Her room was dark and held the smell of unwashed grown-ups, dense and loamy, a woman and a man. The bed was unmade. A kid's room never smelled like that, no matter how many were sleeping there. I wanted to open a window. She sat down on the unmade bed and reached for the pack of Benson and Hedges 100s, saw it was empty, threw it away.
You're having a good time here, aren't you?
She said, peering into the drawer of the bedside table, rummaging inside.
Making yourself at home? Getting comfortable?
I traced the flower pattern on her sheets. It was a poppy. My fingers followed the aureole and then the feelers in the middle. Poppy, the shape of my mother's undoing.
A little too darn comfortable, I'd say.
She shut the drawer, the little ring of the pull clicking. She tugged the blanket up so I couldn't trace the flower anymore.
I may not be some genius, but I'm getting your game. Believe me, it takes one to know one.
One what? I couldn't help but be curious about what I was that Star recognized in herself.
Going after my man.
She straightened out a cigarette butt from the plaid beanbag ashtray on the nightstand and lit it.
I had to laugh. I wasn't.
That was what she saw?
Bang, 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 Lord Almighty, I didn't. Always hanging around, handling his tools. What's this for, Uncle Ray? I've seen the two of you. Everybody asleep except the two of you, cuddling up just as sweet as you please.
She exhaled the stale butt smoke into the close, humid air.
He's old, I said. We're not doing anything. He's not that old, Star said. He's a man, Missy. He sees what he sees and he does what he can. I got to talk fast before he gets back, but I got to tell you, I decided I'm calling children's services. So whatever you were thinking, it's all over now, baby blue. You're history.
I stared at her, her furry lashes. She couldn't be that mean, could she? I hadn't done anything. Sure, I loved him, but I couldn't help that. I loved her too, and Davy, all of them. It was unfair. She couldn't be serious. I started to protest, but she held up her hand, the butt smoldering between her fingers.
Don't try to argue me out of it. I got a nice thing going here now. Ray's the best man I ever had, treats me nice. Maybe you haven't been trying, but I smell S-E-X, Missy, and I'm not taking any chances. I live too long and come too far to blow it now.
I sat like a fish in that airless room, flopping, as the rain battered the metal roof and walls. She was kicking me out, for nothing. I felt the ocean tugging me from my tiny little place on the rock. I could hear the river carrying its tons of debris, I tried to think of an explanation, a reason that might satisfy her. I never had a father, I said.
Don't.
She crushed the twice-smoked butt out in the ashtray, watched her fingers.
I've got myself and my own kids to worry about. You and me, we hardly know each other. I don't owe you a thing.
She looked down at the front of her fuzzy sweater and brushed at some ash that had fallen on her full breast. I was slipping, falling. I had trusted Star, and I'd never given her reason to doubt me. Thinking of her, I felt something flow into my emptiness like a flexible rod of rebar climbing up my spine. I knew it was evil, what I was feeling, self-will, but if it was, then it was. I suddenly saw us on a giant chessboard and saw my move.
He might be mad, I said. You thought of that? If he knew you sent me away because you were jealous?
Star had been halfway to the door, but she stopped and turned around. She looked at me as if she'd never seen me before. I was surprised at how fast the words poured out of me then. I was the one who never had words.
Men don't like jealous women. You're trying to make him a prisoner. He's going to hate you. He might even break up with you.
And I liked the way she flinched, knowing I had caused the lines in her forehead. There was power in me now, where there had been none. She pulled down her sweater so her breasts were even more prominent, glanced at herself in the mirror. Then she laughed.
What do you know about men, you baby?
But I felt the doubt that had made her turn to the mirror and kept going.
I know that men don't like women who try to own them.
Star hovered by her dresser, uncertain now whether she should stop listening to me and get rid of me quick or let me go on mining the possibilities of her doubts. She busied herself looking for another butt in the ashtray, found one that wasn't so long, straightened it out between her fingers, and lit it with her powder blue Bic lighter.
Especially when there's nothing going on. I like you. I like him. I like the kids. I would never do anything to screw it up. Don't you know that?
The more I said it, the less true it was. The angel on her bureau looked down, ashamed, afraid to see me. The rain drummed on the roof.
Swear you're not interested in him,
she said finally, squinting against the vile smoke. She grabbed the Bible off the bedside table, a white leather Bible with red ribbons and a gilded edge.
Swear on the Bible?
I put my hand on it. It could have been the phone book for all I cared now. I swear to God, I said. She never called Children's Services, but she watched my every move, every gesture. I wasn't used to being watched. It made me feel important. I sensed a layer of myself had been peeled off that day in her bedroom, and what was under it glowed. One night she was late getting dinner, and as we were finishing, Uncle Ray glanced at the clock.
You're going to be tardy if you don't get a move on.
Star leaned back in her seat and reached for the coffee pot behind her on the counter, poured herself a cup.
I guess they can get on without me for one night. Don't you think, baby?
The following week, she skipped two more meetings, and the third week, she actually missed church. Instead, they made love all morning, and when they finally did get up, she took us all out to the IHOP, where we ate chocolate pancakes and waffles with whipped cream in a big corner booth. Everyone was laughing and having a good time, but all I could see was Ray's arm around her shoulder on the back of the leatherette booth. I felt strange and moved the waffle around on my plate. I wasn't hungry anymore. It was spring, painting the hillsides with orange drifts of California poppies, dotting the cracks in gas stations and parking lots with poppies and blue lupine and Indian paintbrush. Even in the burn zones, the passes were matted with yellow mustard as we jounced along on Ray's old pickup truck. I told him I wanted to see the new development up in Lancaster, the custom cabinetry he'd been working on. Maybe he could pick me up after school sometime. You know how funny Star's been, I said. Every day I came out of school hoping I would see his truck with the feathered roach clip hanging from the rearview mirror. Finally, he had come. The development itself was bare as a scar, with torn and dusty streets of big new houses. Some were already roofed and sided, others finished to the insulation, some skeletal and open to the sky. Ray led me through the house where he was working, clean, the exterior finish smelling of raw sawdust. He showed me the solid maple cabinetry in the eat-in kitchen, the bay window, the built-in bookcases, the backyard gazebo. I felt the sun glinting off my hair and knew how my mother felt that day, long ago at the Small World bookstore, when she had seen my father and stood in the window, beautiful in the light. I let him show me around like a real estate agent. The living room's two-story picture window, the streamlined toilets in the two-and-a-half baths, the turned banister, the carved newel post.
"I lived in a house like this when I was married," he said, running his hand along the flank of the heavy banister, pushing against the solidity of the post.
I tried to imagine Ray in a two-and-a-half bath life, dinner on the table at six, the regular job, the wife, the kid, but I couldn't. Anyway, even when he was doing it, he was going to the Trop instead of coming home, falling in love with strippers. I followed him upstairs, where he showed me the finish work, cedar-lined linen closets and window seats. In the master bedroom, we could hear the hammering from the other houses and the sound of the bulldozer cutting a pad for a new one. Ray looked out the smudgy casement at the surrounding construction. I imagined what the room would look like once the people moved in. Lilac carpets and blue roses on the bedspread, white and gold double-dresser headboard. I liked it better the way it was. Pink wood, the sweet raw smell. I watched the browns and greens of his Pendleton shirt, his hands spread on either side of the window frame as he looked down into the unplanted yard.
"What are you thinking?" I asked him.
"That they won't be happy," he said quietly.
"Who?"
"People who buy these houses. I'm building houses for people who won't be happy in them."
His good face looked so sad. I came closer to him.
"Why can't they?"
He pressed his forehead to the window so new there was still a sticker on it.
"Because it's always wrong. They don't want to hurt anyone."
I could smell his sweat, sharp and strong, a man's smell, and it was hot in the room with the new windows, heady with the fragrance of raw wood. I put my hands around his waist, pressed my face into the scratchy wool between his shoulder blades, something I'd wanted to do since he held me that first Sunday when I ditched church and stayed behind in the trailer. I closed my eyes and breathed in his scent, dope and sweat and new wood. He didn't move, just gave a shuddering sigh.
"You're a kid," he said.
"I'm a fish swimming by, Ray," I whispered into his neck. "Catch me if you want me."
For a moment, he stood still as a suspect, his hands open on the window frame. Then he caught my hands, turned them over, and kissed the palms, pressed them to his face. And I was the one who was trembling. He turned and held me. It was precisely how I had wanted to be held all my life, by strong arms and a broad, wool-shirted chest, smelling of tobacco and pot. I threw my head back, and it was my first kiss. I opened my mouth for him to taste me, my lips, my tongue. I couldn't stop shaking unless he held me very tight. He pushed me away then, gently.
"Look, maybe we should go back. It isn't right."
I didn't care what was right anymore. I had a condom from Carolee's drawer in my pocket, and the man I'd always wanted for once in a place we could be alone. I took off my plaid shirt, tossed it onto the floor. I took off my t-shirt. I took off my bra and let him see me, small and very pale. Not Star, but me, all I had. I untied my hiking boots, kicked them off. I unbuttoned my jeans and let them fall. Ray looked sad right then, like someone was dying, his back pressed against the smudged window.
I never wanted this to happen, he said.
You're a liar, Ray, I said. Then he was kneeling in front of me, his arms around my hips, kissing my belly, my thighs, his hands on my bare bottom, fingers in the silky wetness between my legs, tasting me there, my smell on his mouth as I knelt down with him, ran my hands over his body, opened his clothes, felt for him, hard, larger than I thought it would be, and I thought, there was no God. There was only what you wanted. All day at school, and in the rayless afternoons down the wash, or at dinner with Star and the kids, or when we watched TV at night, Ray was my only thought, my singular obsession. How soft his skin was, softer than you'd think a man's skin could be, and the thickness of his arms, the sinews tracing along his forearms like tree roots, and the sad way he looked at me when my clothes were gone. I sketched the way he looked nude, gazing out the window after we'd made love, or lying on the pile of carpet padding he dragged into the corner of the new bedroom. On our afternoons, we'd lie on those pads, our legs entwined, smooth over hairy, his fingers lightly covering my breast and playing with my nipple, making it stand up like a pencil eraser. I hid the drawings in the box with my mother's journals, a place Star would never think to look. I knew I should throw them out, but I couldn't bear to. Star was drinking now. She was predictable. Her edginess spilled over, mostly at the kids. She was accusing her daughter of all the things she wanted to accuse me of. Carolee barely ever came home. She went dirt biking with Derek in the afternoon, the drone of the bikes like a nagging doubt. When I wasn't with Ray, I stayed at school or went to the library or hunted frogs with the boys as the Big Tahunga's winter flow slowly dried up into rivulets and muddy pools. The frogs looked like the mud, and you had to be very still to see them. Mostly, I just sat on a rock in the sun and painted. Then one day, Star was tanked and yelling at the boys for their mess in the living room, some plastic lizards and Legos, and an exhibit Davy was working on. It was a painstakingly accurate model of Vasquez rocks and the fossils he'd found there on a field trip with his class, Turritella shells and trilobites from the Cambrian era. Star threw toys and puzzles and then marched over to Davy, lifted her foot, and crushed his project in two fast stomps. I told you to clean this crap up! The other boys ran out the screen door, but Davy knelt by his ruined exhibit, touching the crushed shells. He looked up, and I didn't have to see his eyes behind his glasses to know he was crying. I hate you! Davy yelled. You ruin everything! You can't even comprehend! Star grabbed him, started hitting him, holding him by one arm so he couldn't get away screaming. Who do you think I am? I'm your mother. I'm a person. I cannot do all this by myself. Have some respect. It started as a spanking, but it turned into just a beating. The little boys had run away, but I couldn't. This was because of me. Star, I said, trying to pull her off. Don't. You shut up, she screeched and threw me off. Her hair was in her face, her eyes white all the way around the pupil. You have nothing to say, you hear me? Finally, she stumbled away, crying into her hands. Davy just sat by the devastation of his project, and I could see the tears rolling down his face. I crouched next to him, seeing if there was anything that could be salvaged. Star opened the Jim Beam she'd started keeping in the cabinet with the breakfast cereal, poured herself a glass, threw in a few ice cubes. She was drinking right in front of us now.
"You just can't talk to people like that," she said, wiping her eyes, her mouth. "Little shit."
Davy's arm hung at a funny angle. "Does your arm hurt?" I asked softly. He nodded, but he wouldn't look at me. Did he know? Could he guess? Star sat on a molded kitchen chair, slumped with exhaustion after the beating, sullen, drinking her booze. She took a cigarette from the gold package and lit it.
"I think it's dislocated," Davy said.
"Wine, wine, wine. Why don't you go somewhere and whine?"
I filled a bag with ice, put it against Davy's shoulder. It looked bad. His mouth was all puckery. He never whined. "He needs to go to the hospital," I said, afraid, trying not to sound accusing.
"Well, I can't drive him. You drive him."
She fumbled in her purse for the keys and threw them at me. She had forgotten I was only 14.
"Call Uncle Ray."
"No."
"Mom,"
Davy was sobbing now,
"help me."
She looked at him, and now she saw the angle of his arm, the way he held it out by the elbow in front of him.
"Oh, Lord!"
She ran over to Davy, knocking her shin into the coffee table crouched by her son where he sat on the couch, holding his arm.
"Oh, mister, I'm sorry. Mommy's sorry, baby."
The more she thought about it, the more upset she got, running at the nose, trying to comb his hair back with her awkward hands, making jerky, meaningless gestures. He turned his head away. She crossed her arms across her chest, but low, more toward the belly, and huddled next to the couch on the floor, rocking herself, hitting her forehead with her fist.
"What do I do, Lord? What do I do?"
"I'm calling Uncle Ray," I said. Davy knew the number, recited it while I called him at the new houses. Half an hour later, he was home, his mouth set in a thin line.
"I didn't mean it,"
Star said, her hands in front of her like an opera singer.
"It was an accident. You've got to believe me."
Nobody said anything. We left Star, crying in monotonous sobs. Took Davy to the emergency hospital where they popped his shoulder back in, taped it down. We concocted a story about how we were playing on the river. He jumped off a rock and fell. It sounded stupid even to me, but Davy made us promise not to say it was Star. He still loved her, after everything. Easter, a pure crystalline morning where you could see every bush and boulder on the mountain. The air was so clean it hurt. Star was in the kitchen fixing a ham, pushing little points of cloves into the squares she'd scored into the top. Star served up lunch, creamed corn, canned pineapple rings, brown and serve rolls. Ray and I couldn't look at each other or it would all start again. We looked at the little kids we played with our food, congratulated Star on her cooking. Ray said Reverend Thomas wasn't half bad. We had to put our eyes anywhere but on the other one's face. I studied the little bowl of pink peppermint ice cream with jelly beans sprinkled over and the Easter lily in the middle of the table in its foil-wrapped pot. We hadn't been together since we took Davy to the emergency room. We hadn't talked about it, how it had all gone too far. All afternoon we watched Easter shows on TV, pink-skinned evangelists and choirs in matching sateen gowns. Congregations the size of rock and roll concerts, hands waved in the air like sunflowers. "We should be there," Star said. "Next year, we'll do the Crystal Cathedral, Ray. Let's."
"Sure," Ray said.
He had changed out of his church clothes back into his regular t-shirt and jeans. We played Chinese checkers with the boys and avoided each other's glances, but it was work, being in the same room without touching, especially with Star sitting next to him, one hand up high on his soft wash jeans. I couldn't stand it. After Davy won, I went outside and walked around down in the wash. All I could think of was her hand on his jeans. I was bad. I had done bad things, I had hurt people, and the worst of it was I didn't want to stop. Blue shadows climbed the tawny round slopes of the mountain, like hands modeling the shape of a lover's thighs. A lizard perched on a rock, thinking he was invisible. I threw a pebble at him and watched him dart away into the chaparral. I tore up a leaf of laurel sumac and held it to my nose, hoping it would clear my head. I smelled him first, the smell of dope wafting on the twilight air. He was in the yard, sunlight striking his face and warming it like a stone. The sight of him caught in my throat. Now I knew I'd been waiting for him. I climbed onto a rise so he could see me, to the east, on the blind side of the trailer, then descended into a bowl of sand between the boulders. A minute later, I heard him walking up the riverbed, dry already, though it was only April. I knew Davy would read all this tomorrow in our tracks, but the moment I touched Ray, I knew we could never be apart, no matter how much we wanted to, no matter who we hurt. His lips on my neck, his hands under my shirt, pulling my pants open, peeling them down. My thighs craved the naked touch of his hips. We fit together like magnets as we sank into the sand. I didn't care about scorpions or the Western Diamondback. I didn't care about rocks or who might see us. "Baby, what are you doing to me?" he whispered into my hair. The last time I heard two adults fight was the night my mother stabbed Barry in the hand. Smashing, crashing, I covered my head with the pillow, but I could still hear every word through the thin walls. Stars drunken screeching, rays murmuring rebuttals. "You used to get it up fine before you started fucking that little bitch. Admit it, you bastard, you've been fucking her." I crouched deeper into my sleeping bag, sweating, pretending it wasn't me, it was some other girl. I was just a kid, I had nothing to do with this. "You perv! You like fucking kids? What's next, dogs? You really like that skinny twat better than me? That no-tit baby?" The shame, knowing that the boys were listening. Now they knew everything. How long did I think I was going to get away with it? I wished I'd never come here. I wished I'd never been born. Yet I had to admit there was a part of me that was proud, even excited, that Ray couldn't get it up for Star. He couldn't fuck her, no matter how big her tits were, no matter if she'd let him put it up her ass. It was me he wanted. I heard more crashing, yelling, and then suddenly the door to my room flew open. Star, in her Victoria's Secret rose negligee, all twisted around, both huge tits exposed, was waving Ray's 38. I would see that sight for years in my dreams. She fired without aiming, one arm extended. Pain bloomed in my shoulder, raced fire across my ribs. I staggered for the dresser to climb up and out the window, but then she fired again, and my hip exploded. I fell onto the floor. I could see her coral-painted toenails. "I told you to leave him alone." The ceiling. No air. The metallic smell of static and gunpowder and my own blood. Light in my eyes, hands moving me. Someone was screaming. "God." Uniforms, questions. Bearded man. Woman. Shirt button wrong. Flashlight in my eyes. "Where's Ray?" I asked, turning my head from the light. "Astrid?" Davy, the light in his glasses, holding me together. "She's coming too." Another face, blonde, doll-like, false eyelashes, black shirt. "Astrid, who did this? Who shot you? Just tell us, tell us, tell us who." Davy shoved his glasses up his nose, stared into my eyes. He shook his head imperceptibly, but I saw. In the doorway, the two little boys huddled, jackets over their pajamas, Owen with his broken neck giraffe, head sagging over his arm, Peter with a jar of lizards. The foster kids. They knew what came next.
Astrid, what happened? Who did this to you?
I closed my eyes. Where could I begin to answer such a question anyway?
Is she going to be okay?
Davy asked.
Great job, son. Without you, she'd have already bled to death.
Hands under me, firestorms of pain as they lifted me onto the stretcher, screaming. Fire. Fire. I stared into Davy's eyes, knowing that who felt worse was a toss-up. He held my hand, and I held his, as hard as I could, though the painkillers were knocking me out.
My stuff.
We'll get it later. Caseworker couldn't even button her shirt right. Davy started grabbing things, my mother's books, my sketchbook, some paintings, the animal scat poster. But Ray,
Davy, my box.
Davy's face darkened. He'd read the tracks. My brain fading into blue greens and yellows, a coruscating flicker of Tiffany glass.
Please, I whispered.
Let go now, sweetheart. You need to come with us. He grabbed the wooden jewelry box, his face twisted like when his shoulder was dislocated. He stayed with me as they wheeled me out to the ambulance, shrugging off the black shirt doll woman as she tried to lead him away. Overhead, the cradle moon shone like a silver hoop. Beardman talking to me as he loaded me in the back of the ambulance. Relax. You gotta relax now. We got your stuff. Then the rear doors closed. Davy went away. The night swallowed him. Swallowed them all.
We got her, said the plainclothesman in his white socks. We caught her trying to see the kid. Says she was visiting her sister. You know damn well she shot you. Why make up a story about burglars? She's not even your mother.
If I were Star, maybe I would have shot me too. Maybe I would have painted the doorknobs with oleander like my mother if Ray had said he didn't love me anymore. It was hard for me to focus. Star in her nightgown, my mother in her blue dress. Barry, holding a cloth to my forehead. Why did it seem all the same? Why did it melt together like crayons left in the car on a summer day? The only one who stood distinct was Davy. Letters came from my mother. A girl my age, a hospital volunteer with fluffy brown hair and pale green eyeshadow, tried to read them to me, but it was way too surreal, my mother's words in her ignorant voice. I made her stop.
Dear Astrid, they say they don't know if you will last until morning.